This is Will's Band of the Week for February 26th, 2018. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Hello.
And Craig, live from the Ipswich Bureau.
Here I am.
Yeah, across the ocean, once again.
Miracle.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little jaded, but excited for some good music.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm excited for this one. It's going to be good. It's going to be, you know, I hate to be too brash about it, but I'm kind of confident of greater than $0 on this one.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I think this might raise into the top 10 podcasts.
Whoa.
That we've done.
Well, a little early, I think, to be.
Well, we're off to
a
great start.
We are off. I mean, we've had some good small talk. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Chris isn't on. That's a good start.
Right? Yeah. Well, in that regard, we've been doing great for a long time. Chris just sits back and, you know, lets the podcast happen.
Right.
Yeah, we really should get him on at some point, though.
Yeah, you know, anytime you just say, hey, do you want to be on it? He always does.
So I need to prompt him more.
So maybe he's just being coy. Maybe.
Yeah, he's just like, he wants more attention.
You know, yeah, he wants us to beg.
Yeah, that must be it. All right, let's see. Should we get the show underway? Should we dispense with frivolity and get the show moving?
Whoops. Yes.
Yeah.
You know what that means?
Live report time.
It's live report time.
Yeah. Who's got live reports?
Craig has one. I've got one. Barrett, you have a live from Rome.
From Rome, right.
Report. So do you want to give us the rock and roll related recap of Rome?
There was very little music involved in the trip to Rome. It was really more history and eating and sightseeing. You know, before we left, I looked up to see if I could see if there's any bands coming and stuff. And they don't really seem to have too much of a scene. And to be honest, when we were there, you know, after a long day of walking on these cobblestone streets and stuff, I really didn't feel that much like, you know, going out to see anything anyway. So, you know, I do not have any live reports.
So
I saw a guy playing Hotel California outside of the Caesars Forum, but that was about it.
Any? You must have heard 38 Specials somewhere.
No, I did not.
No, my goodness.
They seem to be completely ignoring 38 Special. None of the restaurants I was in played that song at all.
But you did say that you heard some Wilco, right?
Oh yeah, we did go. On the other side of the Tiber, there's this kind of a more hipster neighborhood called Dressed Avery, and we went over there, and they had some good, you know, bars and good beer selection, which was very rare in Rome. There's not a lot of beer besides, like, Peroni and Moretti, which are everywhere. Otherwise, you know, they drink a lot of, obviously, wine, and then Aperol and Campari drinks. Those are kind of the things over there. Anyway, we went over there and had some beers and stuff and sitting around, and Wilson got to have a burger, which was a nice break for him. And yeah, they played a Wilco song, which elevated my mood. It was the least Italian thing that happened in the whole trip, you know. So
would you recommend Rome?
I would give Rome the highest recommendation possible.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Even without rock and roll.
It gets a 10 out of 10.
Wow. So it's as good as, like, Led Zeppelin 4.
Even better. It's better than that.
Wow. Yeah. I can't give a higher recommendation than that.
There was one kind of rock and roll moment. We were in this really cool bar. It kind of had a... First of all, everything is really small. This bar was about two times as big as the studio here, which is small. It's like a small, you know, like the smallest bedroom in a person's house.
Mm-hmm.
Twice the size of that. And just having a great time, drinking some Negronis, which is a Campari drink that we... Campari and gin, we became fans of there. And the song Johnny Be Good, the Chuck Berry song, came on. And I swear, I just felt like I was in this, you know, like 50s black and white Italian art film. It was really cool, you know. I don't know why, but...
Like your ability to see color just stopped and it became black and white.
Maybe I'm not describing things properly, but I don't know. I just had that sensation. JJ and I both did. Like, wow, this is really, really cool. And I never really liked that song very much at all. But when we were there, I don't know, it was just hard to describe. Rome is not a rock and roll place. It just doesn't have anything about it that feels rock and roll. So that being the one exception. So there you go.
We'll give that credit as a live report.
All right.
Live travel. All right. And Craig's live reports are always the best, so we should save it for last, his. So I'll do mine. I went to Portland, and I just happened to be in Portland when there was a pretty decent show there, headlined by Parquet Courts. Also on the bill were Japanese Breakfast, Jay Som, somebody I'd never heard of named Cat Hoke from Portland, and Hand Habits. So that's a pretty good lineup, right?
Yeah, that's good.
I expect nothing less from Portland.
They had a thing, it was called the Sabretooth Music Festival, and it was three nights in a row at the same venue, this old theater called the Crystal Ballroom. And this was the Saturday night, the middle night. It was the night that I left town, Thurston Moore was playing. And the night before, was some bands I never heard of. So that was the night I went, was the night to go. Here's the disappointing thing. They actually started on time at 7:30 p.m., which meant that I missed Hand Habits, which would have been, you know, one that I really would have liked to see. We got there at 7:50, and she was done playing. So like, they did not mess around. In fact, I'm thinking they must have started a little bit early, because otherwise she would have had to have played like less than 20 minutes. So that was disappointing, but the rest of it was definitely worth seeing. Cat Hoke is pretty good. She's got like a five-person band, kind of a cross between psychedelic and a little dream poppy. And the podcaster I thought of was Nicholas, who would have probably liked it the most.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Som. You know, Jay Som is one of those names you hear all the time, right? And I think her album from like a year ago was really popular. I was a little bit uninspired by her set.
Yeah, I've not seen her live, but she came to Madison a couple of times, played at the Union, and I was trying to get excited to see it, so I listened to her album. It just didn't grab me.
So I kind of wanted to like it, and I didn't really dislike it, but it wasn't super inspiring. But then Japanese Breakfast I've seen before, and they were great. She's really put together a really good live band. And my son went with me because of Japanese Breakfast, which he likes, and we were both very, very happy with their set. It was a little short. I think when you have five bands, you shorten them up a little. It's probably a 45-minute set, but it's all good. And then Parquet Courts, I liked them. They were punchy and kind of punk rocky and sounded really good, but my son is not really much into Parquet Courts, so... He was going to leave and was assuming that I would stay, but I decided to leave with him after about five or six songs. I was getting kind of tired. I'm an aging rocker, you know,
right
when it gets late. But I still would give them a general overall thumbs up. They had the a mosh pit going and they were rocking. Another thing that was interesting about this setup at this venue. They had you could buy an all ages ticket or a general admission, and then, you know, it's just a thing where they give you the stamp if you're of age, right? You know, the beer permission ticket. But they had the beer area farther back, which I actually think is kind of a good thing, because then the underage people could all go to the front. And then if you wanted to have a beer, you could go back into the beer pen, and then you could just go back and watch the band. But you couldn't have the beer and the band at the same time. So it's a slight sacrifice for the older beer people, but I think it's probably worth it for letting the young people go up in the front. Mm-hmm. So that was my take on it. So pretty cool. All good. Portland rocking. But I can't understand why, but I never once ran into Carrie Brownstein. I mean, even at Powell's Bookstore, you know, you're supposed to run into Carrie Brownstein, aren't you? Or maybe Fred Armisen.
That's what you hear. Yeah. You definitely would imagine so. But
yeah. Yeah. All right. That's it. Now for the real live report, we're going to turn it over to Craig.
Oh, I'm not, well, I hope I can do justice to this big billing. So on Friday evening, we went down to London to watch Always at the Roundhouse in Camden. Now, this is a kind of prestigious venue, I think. I just looked it up. But it's 1,700 capacity, so not that large. But I kind of think if you're at the point in your career where you're headlining the Roundhouse, that's a really nice place to be. It's kind of a little bit of kudos to playing there. And usually I've seen Always played to about 100 people, so it's still 17 times larger than that. So it's a big step up for them. Kind of come quite early in their career as well. You'd think normally, kind of, I imagine this is kind of a prestige venue once you got to about 5 or 6 albums or something. Anyway, I think we got there pretty late. We missed the opener, unfortunately. And then we were kind of stuck at the back. But it's kind of, it's called the Roundhouse, as I said, and it's like an old engine shed for railway vehicles. And it's really... It's a round building, and it has these really nice pillars going up, equally separated, going all the way around. And the stage is at one side, so you can't watch the concert in the round. But most of, you can see all these pillars going round, and there's a nice pointed ceiling. There's some nice woodwork up in the ceiling. So it's a very nice, very large open space, nice light show. I think Always did pretty well to fill that large space with their sound. I think it sounded pretty good, but I guess... Yeah, no, overall I'd say it was good. It was interesting for me. Normally I tried to get somewhere near the front at a live show, but it was interesting to see it from a different perspective, because sometimes you come out and you think, who are all these people standing at the back? Why would you ever choose this? But then sometimes it can happen to you that this happens, that the reason they stand there is because they got there a bit late maybe, or they just prefer it. So, yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I played about an hour and 5 minutes or something, if you deduct the 2 minutes where they went off for the fake encore. Yeah, good.
They're playing in Milwaukee in about, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, probably 3 weeks. I bought a ticket just to encourage myself to go. Like, so I either made a donation or I'm going. So I think I'm going. And they're playing at a kind of a larger theater. Barrett, have you ever been to the Pabst Theater?
That's very nice.
It seems like
have
a nice theater.
Have you been to the Riverside? They're kind of similar.
Yeah, I haven't been to either one of those. So I'm kind of looking forward to it.
It's noticeable to me, whether this is a real thing or not, but I seem to notice in my mind when a band takes a bit of effort, whether they buy better equipment for playing live, whether the record company provides them with that, or whether they just have a better sound engineer who tours with them, who gets everything set up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
But certain bands just sound good. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that helps. You're more likely to enjoy it if the sound is good, and that Always are at that place. The last 2 times I've seen them, really warm, dreamy sound. It's kind of, you just feel yourself nodding away, and it's kind of going into kind of almost a reverie, which is quite nice.
Yeah, that's cool. That it definitely does make a difference. I think that's a thing that Japanese Breakfast does well too. Like the 2 times I've seen them, the sound has just been really good. So, yeah, cool, very good. So, let's see. Are you going to report on your other hijinks, Craig?
Incredibly briefly, this is a bit self-indulgent. On the next day, I traveled over to Oxford, which listeners will know as being the site of a world-famous university. And it was my friend, childhood friend's stag party. He studied at Oxford University, so it seemed a natural place to have the... You know, it was a pretty good... You know, people think of a stag do as being quite rowdy, and you have the T-shirts and drink as much as you possibly can. You have strippers and things like this. But we had none of that. It was just a bunch of kind of nerdy guys bumbling around a few real ale pubs for a few hours and... probably the highlight was when we heard Black Betty by Ram Jam.
That's always a highlight, right?
it kind of amazes me when it is a trendy-ish gourmet burger place we went to. We have quite a few chains, which, you know, like there'll be one branch in every city, but this was an independent local one. Pretty, not an expensive place to go, but a pretty cool place to go on a Friday, Saturday evening in Oxford. So we were there. Why would you have such appalling music? I don't understand. The two just seem completely incongruous to me. Surely you'd take some effort to have something a bit, even if it's not indie music, which would be my taste, have something current or a little bit edgy. But anyway, yeah, Ram Jam was the choice amongst other rock hits.
It's hard to beat that, isn't it?
It is pretty cool, actually, now you think about it.
So you guys are saying that this song has come up a couple of times. I remember at least once. What were the other contexts during the podcast?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I just try and drop it in whenever I can. I don't really. It's become one of those things. Your 38 special is my Ram Jam.
Yeah. You know what? For some reason, I don't know why I associate these two songs, like raunchy, loud guitar songs, like from the same era. There was a song called Mississippi Queen. Do you remember that song?
Oh, God.
That's, for some reason, I think of that kind of similarly. There was that guy that weighed like 400 pounds and he was all sweaty without a shirt on. Remember that?
I only remember the song. I don't think I ever saw the guy.
Yeah. It might be an exaggeration. But, yeah. Mountain, that was the band.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a big, fat, beardy guy.
I'm not sure about the beard. Now I have to try to find that. Hold on.
The cowbell.
Yep. It's going to really rock. Just wait. I think that has kind of the same, you know, it's slower, but it's got kind of a Black Betty kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Would a current band instantly lose credibility if they applied the cowbell?
Yeah.
Does Japanese breakfast use a cowbell?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, you associate with a lot of musicians. Do any drummers even have cowbells with their setups anymore?
You
play some covers that would have a cowbell.
Like my friend Ken, the drummer, has a cowbell. Like he's got so many drum sets and, you know, he can kind of configure whatever he needs to configure. But we have played some classic rock where he's pulled out the cowbell. Always with a smile on his face, of course, because you can't really do it with a totally straight face.
Right.
Like if you're playing We're an American Band by Grand Funk Railroad,
you
got to have a cowbell, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that drum riff, right? That's a famous drum riff. I'm going to play it now. That's all you need to hear, right? Now, for a drummer to get to play that, like, that's fun, right?
Yeah, I guess.
It's total fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the real podcast now. Are we ready for it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, for no particular reason, except that maybe I read about it again, because you read about it periodically. I just decided I should listen to the album Marquee Moon by Television. It was on somebody's list as like the greatest post-punk album ever or something like that. And I realized I'd hardly ever listened to it. So I just decided that I would just put it into my rotation and listen to it just like as if it were a new album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty fun. I liked it.
Yeah, it's a good album.
That's my review. That's it.
All right.
Anything
Moving
else?
Moving on.
Yeah, I just realized Baird and I are cool because we have almost the same shirt on.
We do.
It's like really similar. It's like
it's like
blue,
a Scotch plaid.
Green, yeah, plaid. Your plaid's a little darker and a little like larger, but yeah. It's pretty similar. Yeah.
Mm. You're the
plus
you're
we have
the
blue
Scottish
jeans
guy.
Too. Blue jeans.
We do
too.
Have blue jeans too.
Yeah.
Is this like a black? This is like a black watch plaid, right?
Oh God, I don't know the names of plaids. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Craig, and jeans. Imagine that.
Are you by any chance, Craig, wearing a dark blue and green plaid shirt right now?
I am not. Oh, I didn't get the memo. Sorry.
That would have been so cool.
Let's
right?
let's edit that and then Craig
go put one on. Yeah,
we can just he can just tell us that he did. He doesn't actually have to do it.
No, he should leave and put one on and come back.
Yeah. I don't have one. You're gonna mail one over.
All right.
Wait, you don't have one?
No.
No, that's outrageous.
Podcast uniform.
Wait, is it just the dark blue and green plaid shirt that you don't have, or do you generally not have plaid clothes?
I don't know if I know. Is it the kind of thick cotton plaid? I don't know if I know what that is. It's an American
plaid is
thing,
more
right?
of a.
It's just the design.
You're thinking of like a flannel shirt, yeah. Which is typically plaid, but yeah. Plaid. Just refers to the design.
Yeah, just kind of a.
It's like
how do you describe
crossing
it?
Lines, you know, like little yeah. squares.
Oh, I have loads of shirts like that.
Okay. With
I'm wearing a crisscross design shirt. So maybe I am wearing a plaid shirt by your definition.
Yeah, maybe we just don't have the right term. So, okay, what about that Television album? So you guys knew this already, right? You've listened to this before. It's from 1977.
Mm-hmm.
So you had 41 years to listen to it.
Yeah. I first heard it in college and. I've always liked it. It's always popular at the coffee shop. Kids like to play it.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a worshipper of it. I'm aware there are people who like it a lot more than me, but it's kind of one of the classic albums that you listen to or buy when you're getting into music, I suppose. And re-listening to it this week was fun because you hear so many of the songs as you go around to gigs and pubs and bars and stuff in America and at home as well. And you think, oh yeah, so this is. I just remind you, oh, this is from this album, obviously. And each of the songs is kind of played on its own as part of like DJ sets or whatever.
Well, you hang around in cooler places than me because I hadn't heard very much of this at all. And the title track has a real distinctive riff that I probably had heard before, but I hadn't heard most of it very much, if at all. So, well, let's just play a track and then you guys can pick your tracks. I'll go with number two, Venus.
So thin.
as television from the classic Marquee Moon. You know what's interesting, though? This album is considered a classic, but there's like nothing else by television that's that anybody seems to pay attention to. And they didn't put out many albums, right?
Yeah, they put out two, and then there was a long gap, and they did one in the, I think, in the 90s. The second one, I think, was called Glory, and I, this past week, listened to it a few times, and it's good, but this distinctive guitar sound in this first album is not really present in the second one as much. It's fine, but, you know, it's rightly thought of as a big step down, I think.
They were or are, depending on whether you consider them still in existence, from New York City. So they're probably neighbors of David, right? I would imagine.
Probably, yeah.
Tom Verlaine is the name that you hear, right? That's a name I've heard a lot. So, you know, he's the famous guy. But then also Richard Lloyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a name that I'd heard, too, when I started doing my music. I was doing my music journalism. So is Richard Hell the same as Richard Lloyd, or are they two different people?
They're different guys.
Thought maybe he changed his name to Hell.
Richard Hell had a band called the Voidoids.
I remember that, hearing of that, yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever listened to.
They had a really great album, probably their debut.
Mm-hmm.
They've just been called, I strongly recommend it.
All right, who's making the next pick?
Oh, Barrett, I'd like you to. You can go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to pick number 7, Prove It.
That's Prove It, track 7 from the Marquee Moon album by Television. Did I mention it's a classic? We got to always have to say that word, yeah.
You did. Yep. I have to correct something that I said. The album, their second one is called Adventure. The first song is called Glory. So
there you go.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's anytime we have an incorrect piece of music journalism, we immediately correct it.
Yeah,
because of our high standards.
Fortunately, it's so rare that we make a mistake.
Right. Usually, we don't need to do that. Yeah.
No.
Craig, what's your take on the Marquee Moon album?
Yeah, it's great. It's interesting. It seems to kind of straddle for me the end of the era of stadium rock and you know, bloated guitar solos and stuff, and then post-punk. It kind of sits neatly between. They say it's a classic post-punk album, but to me it's kind of got, there are some guitar solos on there, but it's kind of considered an aberration by punks,
right?
So it's kind of, yeah, there's really great musicianship, and it's a good album, isn't it? It's a classic, I think we could say.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I'd like to pick track 5, Elevation.
That's Television. Yep, that's one of the good ones too. I'll add, we didn't play the title track, but it's 10 minutes long, and they kind of pull it off.
Yeah, it comes back really well towards the end, doesn't it?
It's a good song. It's got a kind of a cool riff, and there's a lot of soloing and stuff, and it never got to the point, which usually 10-minute songs do for me, where it's like, we get the point now. You can be done now. But it doesn't really. They just do it really well. It's good. So I'm gonna try to do this a few more times this year, where I pick an old album that I've never really delved into and put it in the rotation. It's kind of fun. I know you do that.
I do that quite a bit all the time. That's most of what I do, actually.
Yeah,
nostalgia guy. Barrett's our nostalgia king.
Right.
But it's a rewarding experience.
Good. Well,
either that, or you pick something that's revered as a classic and decide, nah, I don't like it.
Yeah,
and that's kind of satisfying too. So,
yeah.
How about you, Craig? Do you go back and listen to things that might have, kind of addressed blind spots in your music fandom, stuff that you should know, but you haven't really listened to?
Given up on that? I don't know. I just focus so much on the new.
Right.
That's kind of a really fucking wanky thing to say, but
I think Craig,
there's so much new music. I don't really want to get dragged into listening to stuff from the 60s and 70s too much. What I do tend to do is go back and listen to things, albums which I might have forgotten from when I was getting into music, which is kind of the early late 90s, early 2000s. I think that's something I thought about doing this on the podcast. It was not my decision, but suggesting it to Will a few times, like picking some long lost albums from the early 2000s, because I mean, you could easily pick the 90s as well. Stuff that listeners may not have heard because it never was famous, but it's actually really good.
Yeah, that's fun. I was just going to say maybe Craig needs to go back and listen to Garth Brooks. Maybe that's something that he missed, right?
I would imagine he did miss that.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
It's okay to miss a few. Is that a name that's familiar to you? Or
no, not really. No.
Okay.
It was like he was the monster country star,
unbelievably
in the U.S. in
big.
Like in the 90s, right?
Yeah,
that's when he got just gigantic. Because when I went to the Country Music Hall of Fame, there was like a whole section of Garth Brooks. And they probably have gotten rid of that by now. But did you go there?
We did. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
so we were looking at the old stuff, and then the newer wings. We really kind of breezed through there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I don't know.
You wanted the Hank Williams stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like
the classics. Yeah. All right. That was Television. Good band.
So yeah, as you mentioned, we didn't play the title track or the two biggest songs we neglected to play. So I'd encourage somebody to go back and
we go for the deep
thing.
Cuts. What's the other one that's big?
Well, See No Evil and Marquee Moon, I think, are the two.
See No Evil, the opening track. Yeah, so people can do that. They can rely on us for the deep cuts, and they can get the hits themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we basically, we picked the worst songs is what we did.
Yeah.
So if you like that, if you like what we chose, imagine what awaits the rest.
We had to act kind of like music critics, because that's what we are, right? Arrogant music critics. Yeah. Okay, let's keep on rocking. Now we've got some new ones, and we're going to talk about the Ought album. And I've been looking forward to this since I saw them last fall, or like late summer, and loved their live show. Was captivated. So I'm like, I'm excited for this album. So here it is. It's called Room Inside the World. They're a Montreal band, and it's their third album. Kind of different from their first two. I didn't really listen to the first one very much. I listened to the second one pretty much. Well, there's an aspect to this that I'm very curious to get the Barrett reaction. So I'm going to play a song. As we play this, we're going to all think about what about this is Barrett likely to react to, and how is he going to react? So I'm very interested.
Okay.
Because we have not gotten each other's thoughts on this album at all yet.
I haven't said a word.
Clean slate here. So to me, there's kind of an obvious track to start with. It's kind of the most outwardly catchy track. So let's play it. It's number two, Disgraced in America.
Birds fly around while the dividends pay. Birds fly around while I'm picking up change. Cropping up tokens and living in a haze. Build lights in the dungeons and plumbing in the graves. Something was in concert, some song was played. But nothing was delivered and a franchise was made. And what if I told you? What if I said? They built it themselves, they feel so good.
Ought. The album is Room Inside the World.
Okay, so I agree that's the catchiest track on the album. While listening to it, I was trying to imagine what you were getting at.
I got a strong idea.
What this? Yeah. So let's hear.
Okay, this is it,
Craig.
I could be wrong.
Couldn't I?
Do you think you know what I'm thinking about?
You go ahead. I'll tell you if you were right.
Barrett responds to vocal affectation, and this guy does a lot of vocal affectation. And
100%. I even Googled the word to make sure I had the definition correct.
And I'm kind of okay with it on this album. I think I saw them live, and I liked them so much that I'm totally cool with this guy doing whatever vocal affectation he wants to do. But I kept thinking, Barrett's going to be turned off by this. He's not going to like the way the guy like messes around with his voice.
Well, that is fair. That did stand out to me. You guys are both correct to an extent. The type of affectation that bothers me more is like a Billy Corgan.
Well, where that's I'm important
all,
with that.
All that it is an affectation. Uh-huh. Here's when he's like, what if I told you? Like he's trying to be a little bit light and funny there, right? I think. I mean, and so that didn't really bother me very much.
I mean, there's a lot. There's like every song has like he's got like a little bit of a different tone, and sometimes he sounds like two different singers in the same song, I think.
Sure. Yeah, one comparison, I think he sounds like Scott Walker a lot of the time.
I haven't listened to Scott Walker much.
He's just got that kind of baritone range he sings in.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I generally, I'll give his voice a passing grade, you know? It's not my favorite style, but yeah. So you guys were mostly right, but the degree to which it bothered me was not as great as you were hoping.
I wasn't hoping. Well, as long as we're on Barrett's reaction here, do you have a track to pick?
Sure. I would say I like number 5, Desire.
Didn't I say to you not to race it? It was never gonna stay. It was never gonna stay here. You're like the moon in a basket of wheat. You rose out of the roses right under my mouth. And if I would cry from this petty little town, shine back, we will notice, though you never owed us. So passionately painted creatures we met to descend from the bleachers without much more than a promise. Well, you got it in your guts, stinking. I could taste it in your paint when you left and when you came. And I could remark upon that old feeling, but that won't make it remarkable feeling. Didn't I taste it, feel it, and know in so many ways, so many ways. The feel of your honey in the corner of my mouth, like a loop around the block, like a shadow in your notebook. Oh, come on, it's based in rhyme, doesn't matter. Now we pause the tape for some laughter. I won't accept the conceit any further. I will return it to you.
So that's, yeah,
it's a lot.
I don't know. I think, you know, I like the overall sound of it. My criticism would be that as soon as the song is over, if someone were to say, "How did the melody of that one go?" I'm like, I can't remember.
Not memorable melodies to you.
Yeah,
that track you just played is one of my favorite songs on the album.
Yeah, that's kind of an exception to the thing I just said, but you know, we're all guilty of that sometimes, but
it builds too in a really cool way, I think. But I guess we've now played the two catchiest tracks, right? If you want to talk like catchy, let's turn it over to Craig. Then I have some other comments I can make too.
Yeah, you stole my pick there, Barrett, but that's okay. Because yeah, I agree that was my favorite. I what do I think? I think they're a good band. whether these two things can exist independently, I don't know. But I think they're good, but I don't particularly like them, if that makes doesn't really make a lot of sense. I find it too... As Barrett said, there's not really any melodies or tunes, but I think that's deliberate. They tried to make something really interesting, and I've seen a bit of a consensus view amongst comments on the internet that people do like it. It's kind of not straightforward. It's something that would reward repeat listening. But I find it too discordant, and I think that applies also to their early material as well. I find the songs just too rambling and too discordant for me. But this is my taste. So anyway, yeah. Also, the vocal thing really pisses me off quite a lot.
So it does.
So probably it was me who was more annoyed than Barrett.
Was there enough to pick a track? Or are you going to turn it back to me?
Yeah, as I said, I don't get me wrong, I do think they're good, but it's not for me. But anyway, track 7, Take Everything.
That's Ott. All right. I wasn't totally able to sell you guys in this one, was I?
Well, hum that last one for us.
Yeah, well, that one definitely, this is what I'm going to say. I've completely bought into the first 5 songs of the album, the first half plus the middle one, Desire. After that, I do think that it kind of tails off and it gets slower and not very catchy and... So I kind of found the second half kind of disappointing. But I like the first half of it enough to give it a thumbs up for me.
Mm-hmm. See, I would have guessed that Greg would really like, that both of you would really like this. It seems to me that this band would share a lot of fans with a band like Proto Martyr.
They it's funny because in the Apple Music description, wherever they get that, wherever corporate guy writes it, they actually mention Proto Martyr. Which surprised me. But then I kind of, after I read that, I thought, yeah, there are places where some of the kind of clashy guitar and bass kind of are reminiscent of Proto Martyr.
I mean, I feel sort of unqualified to talk about it because you guys know Proto Martyr and like it so much more than I do. But Greg, would you say I'm completely off base, or that's a baseball reference?
I would compare Proto Martyr immediately to someone like the Stooges. Or somewhat, and for example, or would be more like Talking Heads. And I don't really like Talking Heads. Obviously, they're regarded as a great band, and loads of people love them, but it's just not my kind of thing. I do like the grungier, punkier sound, which Proto Martyr do have, I think.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that about the Talking Heads, because that's always been my thing, where it's like, I really should like the Talking Heads, but I just can't really get into them, like, immerse myself, you know? I have to appreciate them from the outside, kind of. Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough ought. People can decide. Probably Anurag won't like it. Anurag is our, you know, he's on board of, like, not liking Protomartyr either.
Yeah.
But I kind of scolded him for that, but... you know, it's deservedly so, I think, but yeah. All right, we have the Superchunk album too. Barrett said he has not had a chance to listen to this. Craig, have you?
Very briefly, but I think you're going to get spontaneous comments from me, which could be interesting or could be a disaster.
Yeah, let's just be spontaneous. Barrett will be really spontaneous.
I'll be completely spontaneous.
So Superchunk is a band from the, well, they must have gotten their start maybe in the late 80s, but they're kind of a 90s band, right? Would you say? That's their era. And, you know, kind of power 90s power punk kind of stuff. And the other trivia, of course, is that they're the owners of Merge Records, Mac.
And isn't that Ought Record on Merge?
Yeah, it is, as a matter of fact. That was...
Merge Showcase.
Showcase, yeah. Mac McCon and his wife, is it... am I going to get this right? Is it Laura Balance?
I do not know.
Boy, but I'm not even going to claim that's music journalism. That's just coming out of my head. Might or might not be right. But they're the owners of Merge Records from North Carolina, and they got this band called Superchunk. And they put out an album that is it's meant outwardly to be political, you know, and be kind of like pissed off at the Trump era. So I think that means that an appropriate track to start with is the one called Reagan Youth. That's Aging Rockers Superchunk. Not aging too badly. They're rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely rocking, I reckon. Turn it up to 11.
Yeah, I was thinking it needed to be louder, and I was trying to turn it up in our headphones, and then I couldn't remember which knob turns up the gain for the recording and which one just is the headphones, so I didn't do it.
Yeah.
It should have been louder in our headphones.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's something that I should like more than I do. I don't know what. It's catchy. It's got, you know, sufficiently fast and scuffed up guitars and all types of things that I like. But that song didn't grab me.
The whole thing grabbed me more after listening. I gave it like 4 listens, mm-hmm. and it definitely grabbed me more. I didn't find it immediately captivating, but it was kind of rocking, and then you know, then the riffs kind of get in your head, and they're a lot of good ones, I think. Craig, what do you think?
Yeah, it sounds, it reminds you a little bit, perhaps not too musically, but just kind of the balls out rocking way of the recent Bob Mould albums. It's kind of just catchy, 3 or 4 minute pop punk. I can't really argue too strongly against it. It's good stuff.
They've got the same drummer too. Did you know that? Bob Mould's drummer.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I was going to say the drums sounded good, you know, so.
Yeah.
Though I'm lying. But they do sound good.
Do you have a track to pick?
It would be kind of meaningless if I picked one. I'd be picking it random. So I'm happy to go over to you. You listened to it 4 times, you said, so it would make more sense for you to pick one.
Yeah. Here's one that's got some good, fun thrash guitars. Number 2, Lost My Brain. That was not the whole song. It was nearly the whole song, though. Lost My Brain. Superchunk. The album is called What a Time to Be Alive.
Is John Worster the drummer?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
He also drums for Mountain Goats and apparently Bob Mould, too, and these guys. He's a busy guy.
Yeah, I think he's your go-to drummer. Need a drummer? Call John Worster.
He's also one of the funniest people
he's on that, in the world. The Sharpling show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that you listen to that I haven't listened to very much.
Mm-hmm. If you want to get a feel for what John Worster and Tom Sharpling do, the first thing they, well, Tom had this show on WFMU, which is a little station out in Orange, New Jersey, basically, you know, across the river from Manhattan. And the first thing they did, it was this little bit called Rock, Rot, and Rule. And everything they've done since has kind of just been based on that. And yeah, give it a listen.
So is it still a podcast that he's updating and doing a weekly thing?
He does it every week, right. And it's, 3 hours every week.
Wow. People should definitely not listen to that until they've listened to our podcast first.
Right.
Right.
If you only have, say, 3 hours
of
listening in you, then that's going to use it all up. You better not do that. But yeah. So
cool.
Check it out. Sharpling and Worster. So, back to this album. How many albums do they have? The short answer is a lot, but...
Quite a few. Yeah, I don't know. I'm saying maybe not 10, but maybe like 7 or 8.
Have you been...
But I don't know.
Do you know a lot of their old stuff?
Not really. Like, I'm not a longtime fan or anything. They've always been out there, and you know about them, and they seem like kind of a fun...
That's
band.
Kind of exactly where I am at with them. And
I've never gotten completely immersed into one of their albums.
I don't think I've ever listened to one all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got they've been around so long and, Merge, like the first decade of, the 2000s. It was my favorite record label by far. And so I was always like, I should really, really listen to Superchunk. And then I'll listen to a little bit and I'm like, okay, that's what that is. Sometime I'll go back and I'll get into that at another time, but maybe it's something I need to address, figure out which is their best album and try to
put
see
that
if
into
I can
your
like
vocabulary.
It.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I'll play one more, which is more on the kind of mid-tempo tuneful side rather than the thrash. it kind of runs the gamut from kind of one end of that to the other. So this is the second to last one called All For You. Superchunk. I think I gave him a good flavor of Superchunk.
Yeah, it sounds fun. Mm-hmm.
Good rockin' album, and probably if you took the time to analyze the lyrics, they'd be pretty good, too. I have a good impression of them. I've listened to the lyrics on the level I usually do, which is kind of like, let some of them kind of float into my head, but not really analyze it too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's rock and roll.
Yeah. Where do you, Craig, are you someone that likes to read lyrics? Does that add something for you, or is it just like whatever? You just like the music more than what the artist has to say?
Yeah, something that sticks in my head quite strongly is I know that Jarvis Cocker of Pulp strongly said this, and I think Michael Stipe of REM as well. I'm not so sure about the latter. Please do not read the lyrics, at least not while listening to the music. I mean, if you go and read it as poetry afterwards, it's up to you. But so since then, I kind of thought, well, if those two front men are telling me not to do it, then I won't do it. So I don't really study lyrics that deeply. I don't regard many front men or front women as being great poets. Like someone like Jay Maskis, who the Dinosaur Jr. is a band I really like. He said the lyrics are just something I have to have them, and it's just something that I think sounds good to the music. And that's kind of mirrors my opinion on lyrics mostly.
Right, just, I would say that that's...
The voice is just another instrument which the singer uses.
Right. I'd say that's the case most of the time, but usually if I hear a little snippet of something that sounds interesting and then I go back and read the lyrics, I will get an extra layer of enjoyment out of it. Mm. You know, like that, remember that Dive album that came out like...
Oh, yeah.
2 years ago now, right?
Probably at least two, yeah.
And, well, it was just about his drug addiction and depression and things like that, and... Reading the lyrics, I think, gave me a little insight into, I don't know, I guess, like, into his life or whatever. Not that that's important or that you need that to appreciate the music, but I don't know.
Yeah, it can give you a different
just an
insight.
Another layer of appreciation.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's not worth looking into. Talking about Michael Stipe, I mean, what REM songs are really worth listening to the lyrics, right? They're either completely obtuse or or they're like Fall on Me or something, you know, that's kind of just straightforward and ham-fisted. I like them all, but I mean, you know, so it's a case-by-case basis.
You know what's interesting? There are probably a lot of people who listen to our podcast without paying attention to the lyrics
That's true, right?
Because they just like the sound of our voices.
Yeah.
It's like, it's music. It's music to their ears, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fine. They don't have to listen to our lyrics, right?
Right.
All right. Our content, my content has come to an end. Do you guys have anything else?
I don't think so. No, we covered some good ground, some good live reports, three records.
Yeah, I think so. All right.
Wait, you're, no, forget it. Never mind.
I think we should sign off.
Let's sign off.
Give the listeners a, you know, the credit for making it this far. And yeah. And I think.
Wait, you know what we might want to do is acknowledge the nice note that we got from Ginger.
Right. From China.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very interested to hear the Sherry podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we had actually heard from Ginger before, right?
Yeah, this completely blew my mind. And if you weren't in Portland, I was going to give you a call right away because I was completely freaked out. I was, JJ was getting her sunglasses adjusted at the optometrist. And I was sitting there like just on my phone. And I thought to myself, and I hesitate to even share this because it sounds like bullshit, but I don't bullshit. I was like, just sort of, you know, whatever, checking out scores and things like that. And for whatever reason, I thought, oh, remember we heard one time from someone from really far away. And I remember reading it like as JJ and I were in line to go to see a movie. I'm like, I'm going to see if I can find that. And I sorted all my old email by, you know, stuff that was forwarded to me from you. I read that first email she sent a little over a year ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next time I looked at my phone, I got the thing that you sent, the forwarded second email. And
yeah,
I was looking at the other one within 5 minutes of when you sent that second one to me. It was just...
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
I don't like go read my old emails, but...
Yeah, just happened to pop up.
Yeah. In fact, so when I saw the new one, I was like, oh, okay, this is, must be this thing that I just looked at, or maybe I'd mistakenly forwarded back to you or something. I was like, it'll be an explanation. But I was just completely floored by the coincidence there. Anyway, so, and she had really nice things to say about all of us and, you know, that the special episode with Sherry in particular. So, yeah, it was really nice to hear from a listener.
Yeah, another listener from Asia. So we're trying to cover the entire world. So mm-hmm. we're still working on that.
Yeah, definitely an international podcast, and we welcome as many different listeners as possible. It's cool.
Yeah.
When we got the Ipswich connection, that was pretty much, you know, like victory right there. But,
yeah,
you know, then we decided to extend it over to Melbourne. Wait, we knew Nicholas before we knew Craig, didn't we? I think. Why is this hard to keep track now?
Do you remember that, Craig?
We're aging podcasters, so it's hard to remember.
No, I don't know.
Huh.
I couldn't be sure. Mm. All the episodes, this is a good chance to mention that all the episodes are there on the Will's Band website.
Right.
In chronological order, so you can search by correspondent names as well, so listeners can go back and listen to the past episodes that way.
The other thing, is I forget sometimes whether we've talked about a certain band or album or whatever, and I'll just search Will's Band of the Week in quotes, and then like the band name or the album name. And if we did it, it'll pop up.
Yeah.
So everyone should be doing that. Scour the internet, because now we've talked about so many things. And of course, the definitive statement about any album is usually what we have to say. So you're going to want to be looking that up, right?
Right, right.
Yep. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm glad you thought of that, Barrett. That was a highlight of the week, getting that email. It was great. Thanks, everybody. And let's talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.